Well, good morning, Fairhaven. Great to see you. I'm going to welcome you if you are a guest, along with all the other welcomes that you've gotten. We're glad to have you here. I want to say hello to Springboro to the south. Great to have you with us as always. We are one church in three locations. I want to also say hello to Northmont and Classics. And I don't know if you know this, we have people right now that are connecting with us. We have college students that are connecting in their dorm rooms right now down in Kentucky. We have Maryland and California and Minnesota and New Jersey and a bunch of people all around. So would you just, in all of our campuses, would you just help me welcome each other by applause as we are one church in a variety of locations. So welcome. All right, grab your Bibles, if you will, and we're going to turn to the New Testament to a book called Galatians, a small book written by the Apostle Paul. And if you want, you can bookmark there, or you can take that little thingy thing, I don't even know what to call it, in your paper Bibles. That little thingy thing, you know, that hangs down, just put it there, because we're going to camp out in one chapter over the next 5 weeks, and so just mark that. This is one of those series, by the way, which if you've ever been to Fairhaven, I always invite you to come back to an entire series. We just think it's better if you are able to be here for all of the messages that are part of a series. This one, however, I would tell you that if you don't come or don't connect online with us in some way, you're going to miss pieces, and it probably won't be helpful to you, because this is one of those series, which I don't typically do, that sort of builds on each other. So what I talk about today, this weekend, is going to be built on next weekend, and then we build on that the third week, and so you really need to be here all 5 weeks as we tackle one chapter in the Bible, because Paul has some really, really important things to say. He actually says it quite harshly, frankly, and so I'm going to try to soften it just a little bit, but I hope we get the meaning of it, because it's really, really important. This is a series that I would say to you that if you have been a Christ follower for more than 5 years, this is going to be a great series for you. If you've been in church for more than 5 years, or you grew up in church, this is a series that you really, really ought to pay attention to, because oftentimes we don't think about some of the things that we're saying to the generations below us in our young generation, and we have to think that through. Now, if you're here and you're not a Christ follower, this is a perfect series for you to understand what it really means to follow Jesus, or to walk this way, as we talk about that. And so this is a great series for you. Or if you're here and you've only been in church for a year or two, and you're thinking, well, great, I don't have to come any longer. Well, no, actually, this would be a great series for you, because you get to pay attention to what we need to learn again, those of us that have been around for more than 5 years. So I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I know many of you have been around for more than 5 years. And so we want to dive in and take a look at what Paul has to say, because he's going to talk to people who have been around for a long time and have kind of lost the way of how to describe what it really means to walk this way, or walk with God, or to follow Jesus in their life over a period of time. And so this is a great series for that, and we're going to camp out in Galatians chapter 5, as I just mentioned. Let me start out by making sure that it's clear to everybody that Jesus invites us to follow him. So if you're here and you're a guest, with no apologies, we would tell you that the best thing we could tell you is not that we have great kids ministries, which we do, that we have some of the smartest people we believe in, you know, maybe the Montgomery County area or Greene County, which I think we do. We have some very, very smart people here. The best thing we could tell you is that Jesus, who was sent by God to die for you and then to walk away from a grave to prove that he was God, has something that he wants you to know. And so he invites you into a relationship with him, and so he invites us to follow him. Of course, the question is, what does it mean to follow him? I'll take it one step further, actually, and say this, that Jesus invites everyone to follow him. Because some of you might say, you know, I didn't grow up in a home where we went to church. Or some of you would say, you know, I grew up in a home where, you know, we learned about Buddha or about some Hindu religion. And so whether you're here and you have a Hindu background, or you have a background in Islam, or a background in any other religion of the world, I would tell you that this isn't about a religion. This is all about Jesus, the man Jesus, God, the Son of God, Jesus, and what he did for us that allows us to be in a relationship with God the Father. So anybody's welcome. Doesn't matter what your background is, and doesn't matter what has happened in your life. I've talked to some people and they're like, I don't know that God could love me. And I'm like, well, I got great news for you. God can't help but to love you. That's who God is, because God is love, right? And so this is for everyone, so I hope that you tune in. But here's the problem. If you've been a Christ follower, so I'm talking to Christ followers here, if you've been a Christ follower for more than 5 years, sadly, what happens is we begin to portray to the people around us and to the world around us that to follow Jesus means a couple of things. And we need to straighten this out, because I don't know if you've heard or not, but it seems like people in their 20s, our young adults in their 20s, seem to be drifting away from church. They're losing interest in the church. It's hard to find them in the church. They're just not engaged. So for those of you that are here and you're in your 20s, we are so glad you're here. You need to teach us a whole lot about your generation and about really what's happening in your generation, and we want to learn. We want to be teachable in that. But the problem is that many of us have said to follow Jesus, it means a couple things, and let's talk about this, okay? So here's one thing that we will often say if you've been around for 5 years or longer, that if you want to follow Jesus, then you need to know the set of rules. Like, following Jesus means that there's some things that you should do and there's some things that you shouldn't do. And that's true. The problem is we go one step further and we sort of make it about a set of rules, and that's not very interesting. The fact is, it's better than that. Am I right, church? Following Jesus is better than that. It's much better than a set of rules, and so we're gonna talk about this, because this is what we're saying to the world around us. In fact, if you talk to a coworker that has never been to church and you ask him, what does it mean to follow Jesus? They might even say to you, well, it means that I need to follow a few rules, and I'm not following them right now, so I don't know that Jesus will accept me, right? You probably have heard people say that in your schools and in your neighborhoods and so forth. So the problem is we projected to the world around us, particularly to our younger generation, that following Jesus means a set of rules. Here's the second thing that we would often say, that if you want to follow Jesus, it's a list of expectations. That there's some expectations about you, that maybe you have to dress a certain way, that maybe you need to, you know, say a certain thing, or, you know, there's some expectations around that. I grew up in a home where we were taken to church every single day, and I'm grateful for my mom and dad who taught that to me in my life. But I grew up also around a bunch of adults that were in church that led me to believe that in order to follow Jesus, there were certain things that I couldn't do. Like, for example, we weren't allowed to use playing cards when I was a kid. I don't know if anybody else, you know, had that when they were kids. You could play Rook, but you couldn't play poker. How many of you know the game of Rook? Let me just see your hands. You would be over 30 years of age, right? I mean, anybody under 30 doesn't even know what Rook is. Like, what? Rook? I mean, you know, it sounds like, yeah. And so we weren't allowed to use playing cards. I mean, we were not allowed to use cards that had, like, diamonds because that's, you know, that might make you materialistic and hearts. That might make you to think bad things and all kinds of things, jokers and kings on it. And I was kind of taught as a kid you couldn't play with playing cards, because if you did, that would lead to maybe you putting $20 on the table, which would lead to you gambling, which might lead to you getting angry, which means you'll kill the guy. I mean, I don't know how they drew that out, but that's kind of what I, you know, heard when I was a kid, you know. And so we've projected this idea that, you know, if you follow Jesus, it's all about a set of rules and there's a whole list of expectations. And here's another thing that we've kind of said to the world around us, that if you want to follow Jesus, well, you have to attend church. I mean, if you don't attend church, then something is wrong with you. And I've told you this, if you've been at Fairhaven, I've told you this many, many times. I get asked this question all the time. Like, do I have to go to church, like Centerville, Northmont, Springboro Classics? Do I have to go to church in order to be a Christ follower? And here's my answer, and I've said it many, many times. You probably could even say it for those of you that have been around. My answer is always, no. You get to. You get to. Somehow we have projected that going to church is a stipulation to following Jesus. Instead of saying, when you follow Jesus, you want to be a part of something that's much greater than yourself. And I'm going to describe this a little bit later as we get into what we're going to be talking about today. That's really, really important because the motivation is really, really important. And the motivation to simply just attend, that's pretty boring. And it's no wonder that our younger generation doesn't want to be a part because somehow we've said you have to attend. It's not about attending. It's about you coming and gathering with a bunch of people who understand some really important things that I'll tell you about in just a little bit. But that's kind of the list that we have here. And then there's another one, right? If you want to follow Jesus, many of us would probably say this, I have to give my money. And if you know anything at all about Fairhaven, you know that we believe here at Fairhaven that everything you have is not yours. If you follow Jesus, it all belongs to God. Am I right, church? And so what we do is we're not giving Jesus anything. We're actually bringing back to him what already belongs to him. Am I right, church? But somehow we portrayed it that, you know, God wants my money. And so all of a sudden we get in this, uncomfortable conversation and there's an elephant in the room and, you know, any church that talks about money, people are, running for the doors and all that. We've got to reframe the ideas. We've got to reframe what it really means about what Jesus said to follow him. When Jesus says, I want you to follow me, what does that really mean? You see, without even knowing it, oftentimes, this is what we portray to the generation that is younger than us. This is what we portray to the world out there. This is kind of how we frame the idea of this is what it means to follow God. Don't raise your hand, but how many of you would agree with me? It's much better than this, right? It's much better than this. And so if this is what we believe, if this is what we've been taught, if this is what you are teaching your kids, here's what I would say to you. You have been duped. In fact, that's not a word that I use. It's a word that Paul uses in Galatians. You'll see it in just a little bit. We've been duped. That's not what it means to follow Jesus. It's better than that. But if that's the list that you have in your mind, or if that's the list that somebody has taught you, or if you're here and you're 20 and that's the list that maybe you're feeling pressure about, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. Let me tell you why. Because we've sort of slipped back into the old covenant. We've sort of slipped back into the old covenant. When Jesus came, he brought a new covenant, right? But when we look at following Jesus in that list, we sort of slip back into the old covenant. Let me describe what the old covenant is because there's nothing wrong with the old covenant. This is what God established initially with the people of God, and then he moved from that into a new covenant, which is better. But oftentimes we'll slip back into the old covenant. Here's what the old covenant is. The old covenant, number one, starts out with, interestingly enough, a set of rules. That there are 613 of them, actually, when you look at them in the Bible, that there's all kinds of rules. In fact, Paul is going to address in Galatians chapter 5 one of the 613 rules that are there. God gave a bunch of rules, if you will, to the people of God because he cared about them and because he wanted them to survive and because he understood the human body and because he understood relationships and he understood all of that. That's the old covenant. There's a bunch of rules. Now, today, I'll tell you in advance, some of you are going to be pushed back. Some of you who've been around for a long time are going to push back and say, well, aren't rules a good thing? I mean, after all, I've got teenagers. Help me out here. I need some rules, right? We're going to talk about that next week, so do not miss next week because we're going to talk about, are rules even valuable? Should we just throw them all out? Because the old covenant had a set of rules, and there were 613 of them, and that was Lot. Here's something else that we find in the old covenant, that there were sacred men. In the old covenant, there were sacred men, and it was always men, by the way. In the old covenant, it was that there were people who were in charge, and they were the ones that taught you what God said, and they're the ones that tell you what you need to do in your, in your life and in your faith. And these sacred men were far more spiritual than you, and you had to rely on sacred men. In fact, in the Old Testament, we see the priests. They had a job to do. It was a good job to do. Their job was to be the sacred men there in the temples, that you would come and you would worship God in the temple, and they would offer sacrifices for you, and you would come and you would bring your sin and confession, and the sacred men were there to take care of it. And then thirdly in the Old Covenant was that you had to go to the temple. That you had to go to the temple. And here's why. Because God was in the temple. He was in the Holy of Holies. And in the Holy of Holies was the presence of God. And so in order to get close to God, you had to go to the temple. Nothing wrong with that, because that's what God established with his people. He said, I'm going to reside in the temple. I'll be in the Holy of Holies. There'll be priests and people around that will help you to understand making sacrifices, because when you do something wrong, you need to ask for forgiveness, make a sacrifice, because my presence is there in the temple. Can you begin to see how we've slid back a little bit into that thinking? And then here's a fourth thing that comes as a part of the old covenant, and that's that the old covenant is really centered on me. I mean, the old covenant really was about me. It was about me making sure that I did the right things so that I could go to the right religious people and that I could have my sins forgiven because of sacrifices made at the temple. Are you with me so far, church? This is really important to get a grip on. Because then all of a sudden, the arrival of Jesus signaled the beginning of a new covenant. It's a new covenant. Doesn't mean that the old was bad. It means that God was doing something and he was bringing Jesus. He sent his one and only son to put on human flesh and to live perfectly and to be an example for us, to die on a cross so that you and I could have a relationship with God. So if you're here today and you're not a Christ follower, Jesus did all the work. We'll talk about that. And as we look at this and we see that Jesus began a new covenant. In fact, we know that because if you attend Fairhaven in any one of our campuses or venues, you know that on the first weekend of every single month, what we do is we come to a table. We call it communion or the Eucharist. And what we do is we celebrate a piece of bread and we take a cup and we remember, right? We take a piece of bread and we eat it. And we take a cup and we drink it. And we do it faithfully once a month. We don't do it just out of tradition. We don't do it because that's what we're supposed to do. Church, it's better than that. We do it because when Jesus started his ministry and he was about ready to die for the world, for you and for me, he gathered his disciples in the upper room. And they were having dinner. It was called the Passover dinner. It was a dinner that usually lasted 2 to 4, sometimes 6 hours, depending on what you did in it. And he was having this kind of dinner with his disciples. And this is what happened in that meal. You can find this in Luke. You don't need to turn there because we're in Galatians, right? You got that thingy thing that's right there. In Luke 22, it says this, and he, that's Jesus, and he took bread, he gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them. That's the 12 disciples that were there with him as they were having this Passover dinner together. He gave it to them and he said this, this is my body given for you, do this. And church, in all of our locations, in all of our venues, online, even if you're in your own dorm room, out loud, we all get to play here. I want you to repeat, or not repeat, but say what is in yellow here, okay? I'm going to read, and then you read the yellow part, all right? Because this is really, really important. So let's try it. This is my body, Jesus saying, given for you. Do this. One more time. There you go. Now, remember that, not a pun, remember that because we're going to come back to that. But Jesus says, you got to remember this. I want you to remember it. And then he goes on and he says this while they're still together. In the same way, after supper, he took the cup. I don't know if you know this or not, but in the Passover, they have 4 cups of wine that they drink. And the reason there's 4 of them is because of what God said that he will always do for his people in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And the cup that we read in Luke chapter 22 is the 3rd cup out of 4. In fact, while he's with his disciples, after he has the third cup, Jesus says, I'm not even going to have the fourth cup until I come back to get you. So he ends with the third cup. It's the cup of redemption, meaning that God will redeem you back to himself, meaning that God loves you and created you and wants you in a relationship with him. And the way he does that is he sent his son to die for you and I so that we could remember every single week, every single month that he did this for us. And he wants us to remember that. And so then he took this cup and he said this, this cup is the, here comes the yellow part again. This cup is the what? The in which is poured out for you, for all of you. It's a new covenant. If I were to ask you in your small groups this week, jot down what the new covenant means, would you know what to write down? Many of us wouldn't, myself included, unless we study it, unless we really begin to look at it. And this is why this is so important, because Paul in Galatians is addressing this very issue. So let's try it together, okay? Let's see if we can jot down a few things that will help us to understand the difference between the old covenant and the new covenant. So let's get the old covenant up again. Here it is, a set of rules, sacred men going to the temple and centered on me. And what Jesus did is he brought a new covenant. He brought something that's better than this. And so let me describe what the new covenant is. Number one, the new covenant is about a command. It's not about a set of rules. It's about a command, one command. That goes something like this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love what? Your neighbor as yourself. One command. Could it be that in all of this one command, could it be that all of the rules are found in this one command? Come next week and you'll see it. It's absolutely amazing. A command. That's the new covenant. Here's the second thing that we need to know about the new covenant. It's the Spirit of God, that Jesus came and then he said something beautifully. He said, I'm going to leave you. I'm coming back, but I'm going to leave you, but I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm going to give you the Spirit of God. I'm actually going to put the Spirit of God inside of you so that you can walk this way. Wow, that God himself is going to reside inside of us by his Spirit in order that you and I can walk the right way. You see, we don't have to have sacred men any longer. And some of you are probably thinking, did I just resign? No, my job, I understand my job. I am not more spiritual than you are. I am not more sacred than you are. My job has a role, and my role is to stand before you as we gather together, which I'll talk about in a second, as we gather together to remind ourselves of the things that Jesus has said so that we can all go out into the world and live out our lives every single day, right? That's my job. I'm not more sacred than you are. Believe it or not, some of you may even struggle with this. Do you know that because of Jesus in your life, who has given you the Spirit of God, you are sacred to God? Wow. Here's something else that we need to know about the new covenant, and that is the new covenant is about a gathering, and here's what that gathering's about: to gather to remember. Let me blow your minds. You don't have to come to church to meet with God. You can go for a walk and meet with God. You can play golf and meet with God. Shazam. So why bother coming to church? I mean, we got to help our younger generation understand this. Here's why we come to church. It's because we come and we gather together to remember. We gather together to make sure that we hear stories about how God has answered your prayer, and about how God is helping you with the illness that you're dealing with, because how we can remember how God is helping parents with teenagers. Well, we can remember how teenagers are finding strength in their life to live in a culture today that's really, really hard. We can remember how God helps a 20-year-old in college where there's everything before them and now mom and dad's not around and they can do anything that they want, and yet because of the Spirit of God, they have power to be able to do what is healthy and right because they love God and want to honor him in everything that they do, and all of a sudden it becomes more motivated to come and gather together. You see, the word church, by the way, is a wrong translation. It's from the Germans. The Greek word is ekklesia, which means to gather together, an assembly, and we assemble together, we gather together because we want to remember and we want to be inspired. And we want to see God at work. You don't have to go to church. You get to. In fact, Hebrews tells us, don't forsake the gathering together, because when we gather, you get to remember. Has there ever been a time in your life where you've forgotten that God can do great things? I know I have. Anybody else? And so when we gather together, and maybe you have spiritual amnesia, maybe that happened for you this last week, here's the good news. The good news is that when you come together and you see a bunch of people and we gather and we assemble together, we remember, no, God does do great things. He will walk with me. He will help us. You see, that's the new covenant. Well, there's one more piece. The new covenant is a focus on others. See, it's not really centered on me any longer. It's a focus on others. In other words, when we understand that the rules have been put into a command because we need to love God and love others, and the Spirit of God is going to help us so that we can gather together to remember that, and our focus is on others. Could it be that if we love others, we would be really attractive? That 20-year-olds would be flooding this assembly because they want part of that. It was in the context of all this that Paul wrote Galatians the letter. Because you know what was happening in his first missionary journey? Paul was going to churches and he went to Galatia. That's why we call it the Galatians. And he went to Galatia and he said, Jesus brought a new covenant and it's awesome. It's a new covenant. And then missionaries came in behind him and said, well, Paul got it almost right. He missed a few things. You need to keep the rules, and there's still some sacred men like us, and you need to follow what we say, and we'll determine whether you go to hell or heaven, and we'll determine your life. And so they began to mix it. How many of you agree with me that you can have an old and a new and mix it? Am I right? Jesus came to bring a what church? A new covenant. Take your Bibles and let's take a look here, okay? It's in Galatians. And so Galatians chapter 5, actually. We're going to skip all the way to Galatians 5. And some of you are like, well, why don't we start in chapter 1? I'll tell you why in just a second. But the reason is because in Galatians 5, Paul kind of gets to the point. In Galatians 1, 2, 3, and 4, he's pretty upset because they are mixing this and they're getting it all mixed up, and he wants to preserve what it really means to enjoy the new covenant, and so he gets all upset about it. So in Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, he says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourself be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. Now, slavery here in Galatians doesn't mean what you and I know as a really, really bad period of our history in the United States. Am I right, church? That's not what that means. What he's talking about is the list of rules. That's what he's talking about, 613. And so he says, stand firm and don't let yourself be burdened by that. And then verse 2, mark my words, exclamation point. There's no punctuation in Greek, and so the translators just put that there to make sure you know Paul's serious here. Mark my words, he says, I, Paul, tell you that that if you let yourself be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you at all. Now, for most of us, we're like, well, what in the world does that mean? Well, one of the laws was that if you were Jewish and you wanted to prove that you were, you know, a God follower, you had to, men, have a little surgery. And if you're here in middle school and you don't know what circumcision is, ask your mom and dad. You're welcome, parents. So Paul says, because it's one of the laws, he said, stand firm and don't be burdened by this. Mark my words, he says, if you let yourself be circumcised, then Christ will have no value to you at all. In other words, you can't mix the old covenant with the new covenant. You can't say, well, these set of laws pertain, but these set of laws do not. Paul is not saying that you know, you guys, if you don't have some surgery, then you really can't be Christ followers. Because there are some people that were saying that. In fact, there was Jewish Christ followers that believed that Gentiles, that's most of us, if you're not a Jew, you're a Gentile. So they said that if you are a Gentile and you wanted to convert to Judaism in order to be a Christ follower, then you had to do some things in order to join the Christ movement. You had to do a few things to join the Jesus movement. Men, you had to have a little surgery. And so Gentiles started getting circumcised. And over hundreds and thousands of years, we see that even today. How many of you men are circumcised? Don't raise your hand, I'm just. They were blending this together, and Paul had a huge, huge problem. In fact, in chapter 1, he's so angry. This is why we went right to chapter 5. In chapter 1, he says, I'm astonished at you Galatians. Don't mix this. There's a new covenant. He goes on in chapter 1 and says, I was persecuting the Christians. I was the one that was actually killing them. And 14 years later, I've understood that Jesus brings a new covenant, that it's better. It's better. He goes on in chapter 2 and says, you foolish Galatians, chapter 3 rather, you foolish Galatians. I'd say that's pretty hard, don't you think? And he calls them fools, because they're mixing this stuff together. And then he says in chapter 3, you are bewitched. Now I use the word duped, because when I think of the word bewitched, I think of a TV program in the 80s. Anybody else think of that? Right? Duped, that's what Paul is saying, you're duped. And then he says in chapter 4, I'm pleading with you. I'm absolutely pleading with you that you understand the difference between the old covenant and the new covenant. And this is so very important for us. And so then he says in verse 3, look at verse 3, chapter 5, verse 3. Again, Paul says, I declare to every man who lets himself be circumcised that he is obligated to obey the whole law. Paul is saying, if you're going to mix it, and you're saying that one law, circumcision, is important, then you got to follow all of them. All 613. Like, you can't just pick and choose. Like, if you're going to follow the rules, you need to follow all the rules, because you can't mix it together, right? Well, let me give you a couple of the laws that we find, some of the rules, which I don't know if you knew or not, but do you know in Leviticus chapter 12, it is forbidden for you to eat meat that still contains blood. How many of you like your steaks rare? Did you see your hands? Yeah, you should be stoned today. My brother-in-law, we go to a steak house, and I love my brother-in-law, and he always says, well, just put it on the grill for about 30 seconds. I'm like, dude, you're gonna die in like a day. It's so rare, it comes out bloody, and it's just, so that's what Leviticus says. Deuteronomy 21 says that if you disobey your parents, you are to be put to death. How many parents want that law to be reinstated? Exodus chapter 21 says that if you fail to confine your dangerous animal, there are big consequences for that. Leviticus 11 says you shouldn't eat any shellfish. Leviticus 20 says that if you commit adultery, you should be put to death. Paul is saying you can't have one without all of them. So don't mix it. Verse 4. You who are trying to be justified by the law have been alienated from Christ. You have fallen away from grace. If you like to highlight your Bibles, highlight that. Church, this is how important this is. If you and I don't understand the new covenant and what Jesus has done for us, the next generation's at stake. Our assembly is at stake. Our faith is at stake. The rules, it's all at stake. We have to make sure that we understand this. It's about grace. How do you define grace? Well, let me define it for you, and then I'm going to end with one question for you today, and then I hope you'll come back next week because we're going to talk about rules. Are rules important? Should we just throw them out? So let me help you to see some things about rules. See, if you are following Jesus and you don't feel free, church, and you're doing something wrong. So Paul says right here, we ought to be free. We ought to be free to understand the new covenant because of what Jesus did. And if we don't understand that, we're going to fall away from grace. And so here's what grace is. You may want to jot this down. This is powerful when you get your head and your life around this, that Jesus offers grace. So if you're here and you're not a Christ follower in any one of our campuses, we'll understand next week why the law is important for you. But you need to understand that grace is available to you. But for those of us that are Christ followers, here's what grace is. See, grace number one is the gospel. Grace alone is the gospel, that by faith you give your life to God and you invite Jesus to be a part of your life. See, the old covenant says the more rules you followed, the more religious you are. Do you hear that? That's the old covenant. The more rules you followed, the more religious you are. The new covenant says the rule is perfection. Jesus sets the bar so high that no one can get to it. Therefore, he died in our place because he was perfect and he offers to us grace. That's the gospel. That's the good news. That's what we need to understand. No one can measure up. Secondly, grace is that God knows all your secrets, and yet he still loves you. How many of you have a secret that no one knows? Don't raise your hand. How many of you have a secret that no one knows? No one. You know how many people go through life and they're holding on to these secrets and it's so hard for them because they don't know what to do with it. When I was a kid, I was living in a dormitory because I was going to a boarding school over in Malaysia, and every Saturday we used to have to do work hours to help around the school, and so we were moving these boulders down by the ocean to try to stop the ocean from destroying the shore, and so we were moving these boulders, and there was a boulder about this large, and it rolled over my left foot, particularly over my left big toe. And wow, it damaged it. And to this day, my big toe on my left side, the nail on it is deformed and it's thick and it's kind of green. And in order to cut it, I need tin snips. I'm not kidding you. I use tin snips in order to cut my fist. That's just way too much information right there. And I had this scar on my toe here. And every time I look down on my toe, I'm reminded of that rock that rolled over, and yet it's all healed up, but there's a scar there. Do you realize that with your secret, when you offer it to God, he can take the open wound of that in your life, and by his grace, he begins to bring healing, and he closes it up, and here's the best part. He doesn't remove the scar. You know why? Because that way then you can come and you can assemble together with a bunch of other scarred people and you can remember. You can remember the grace of God in your life. That's what grace is. Thirdly, grace is a place that has no room for deserving. The word deserving doesn't fit in any way, shape, or form with grace. See, you don't deserve grace. You can't deserve grace. You will never deserve grace. There is no room in any way for the word deserving. And so we have to make sure that we're very, very clear to the younger generation when it comes to a set of rules, right? We have to be very, very clear. Otherwise, they're going to think that if I do these things, that somehow God is more pleased with me. Well, if you understand grace and you understand the gospel, God is already pleased with you because of his son Jesus, who paid the penalty for everything, past, present, and future. That's good news right there. And you see, the word deserving has no place in it. Fourthly, grace has no measure or limits. It has no measure. God can chase you down. His grace goes a long, long way. Years ago, when I was 21 years of age, and my parents, their marriage was falling apart, and the problem with the marriage falling apart was that there was somebody that was in the middle, and I don't need to give you details, but there was an individual that was in the middle that was creating part of the problem in their marriage, and I got very angry. I've never told anybody this. I tell you because this is one of the secrets I have in my life. One Friday night, I got in my car and I looked up the address of where this person lives, and I drove over to their house. It was in a cul-de-sac. And I saw them sitting in their living room like everything was fine. I got out of my car and sadly, I had a weapon sitting right here in the passenger seat. It wasn't mine, it was my roommate's. And I remember I got out of the car because I was so angry, I was gonna do something to harm this person. This was gonna be a bad day for them, ultimately a bad day for me. And I remember in that moment, I said to God, God, if I've ever needed you in my life, I need you now. And he met me. And in that moment, he says, I can take away all that. By my grace, I can remove all that. And I collapsed into the gutter sitting in that cul-de-sac. And I have a book in me. And I think the title is going to be Tears in the Gutter. Because in that moment, God met me. And it all went away. And to this day, it's gone. That's a secret that I had in my life. And yet the grace of God that had no measure or limit reached out to me and grabbed me in that moment. I'm grateful. See, grace also, thank you. Grace also is totally free. It's totally free. You see, if you gave me a gift card to a restaurant, and you're welcome to do that, if you gave me a gift card to a restaurant and I tried to give you $20 for it and you said, no, and I said, oh, no, come on, let me just $20. And if you took the $20, it would no longer be a gift card, it would be a discount card, right? See, this is free. God offers to you free. That's what grace is. And so then he says something that is absolutely amazing. Look at verse 5, and I'll end here, and then I'm going to give you one question. Verse 5, he says, for through the Spirit of God, we can't mix this together, so through the Spirit we eagerly await by faith the righteousness for which we hope. For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. The rules have changed a little bit. Come back next week and we'll talk about that. And then he says something that is absolutely amazing. He says this in verse 6, you can read it for yourself. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. The only thing that counts is faith expressed through love. Really? I thought there were 613. No. The only thing that counts is your faith expressed through love. Love God and love others. And so could there be that there's a relationship between loving and making sure that we understand what God wants from us, or rules, if you will? We'll talk about that next week. So let me end with this question. What does love require of you? What does love require of you right now? Springboro, what does love require for all of you? Northmont, what does love require for you? Classics, as you think about this, what does it require? What does love require of you in your life? All of you that are here, what does love require? That's the question that we start with. That's how we start this series. If you want to walk this way, we have to answer the question, what does it mean to love? What does that require of us? Because that's the new covenant. That's what Jesus died for. That's what he wants us to be able to think about in our lives. Would you bow with me? And just for 2 minutes, would you just reflect on that one question? What does love require of you right now?